Brunson defends, snaps it outside to Wiggins. Goes by Bullock. Oh! Drops the sledgehammer.
Oh, they called it
open away.
They called an offensive foul.
They did call an offensive foul on Andrew Wiggins, but then they came to their senses. Thank goodness for replay and review. Luka Doncic was the poster child for that poster dunk by Andrew Wiggins, the former Jayhawk, with a sensational performance last night for Golden State. That dunk was one of the best facials I've seen in a while. That, along with Ja Morant, had one recently as well. And then Doncic, of course, doing the old fake flop and act like a hit in the face. And replay shows he never was even hit in the face. And yet he sold it to the official. And if not for replay, that dunk would have been wiped off and would not have counted. Welcome to the Sports Ticket. I'm starting with positive stuff because the Royal stuff is not so positive. Although the bus trip itself was very positive. Andrew Wiggins and the Warriors win last night. And you know, it's something about Andrew Wiggins. I remember many people and some people that listened to the show were talking about how Andrew Wiggins is not that good. Some of you have told me that he's a bust. I'm like, how's the guy a bust? He's averaging 20 a game with Minnesota. I mean, yes, he wasn't the superstar next LeBron James that people claimed him to be. That wasn't him anointing himself as the next LeBron. That was a whole bunch of people that said, hey, he's the Canadian version of LeBron James. I remember what they're talking about. And then KU's going to get him. Okay, he's instantly going to be national champions. And he just wasn't the alpha dog at that point. He still isn't an alpha dog, in my opinion, and that's okay. He fits in perfectly with the Golden State Warriors. When I heard he was going to join the Warriors, I thought this could actually work because he could be the third or fourth option. He doesn't have to be the top dog along with Carl Anthony Towns in Minnesota. You know, he got a ton of money, a max contract with the Timberwolves. That's a lot to live up to. Some players do, some players don't. But one thing about Andrew Wiggins is, unlike James Harden, he plays both ways. He is a very good defender. He's always been a good defender in regards to his length. He's very athletic. And honestly, in this series, if you're trying to figure out who is the MVP, and they do now, it's the first time they've done this, there is the MVP of the Western Conference Finals and the MVP of the Eastern Conference Finals. And the trophies, it's a Magic Johnson trophy in the Western Conference and it's Larry Bird trophy in the East. And I think that makes total sense because those two guys basically saved the NBA. And then Jordan took it to a whole another level, as we know. And so Andrew Wiggins, Kevon Looney, through the first two games, was the MVP of the series. And not Steph Curry, not Klay Thompson, not Draymond Green. Kevon Looney has played outstanding. And then last night, Andrew Wiggins had 27 points, 11 rebounds, and that sledgehammer of a dunk, which just was sensational. And that was, you know, later in the game. And he has to guard Luka Doncic. And Luka, yes, Luka scored 40. Go back and look at his 40. First of all, a lot came when they were down by double digits in the fourth quarter. That makes it very misleading how good a game Luka Doncic had. He is wearing down Luka Doncic. He's making him work quite a bit for his points. And we said it before. You let superstars have 40, 50, 60 points. Honestly, everybody else isn't involved. And you actually have a better chance of beating a team like that. There are coaches that believe, go ahead, you hog the ball, you get your 45, we can live with it. Because we'll shut everybody else down. You're going to be not involving anybody. Here's an amazing stat. And I like Luka Doncic. In fact, he's one of my favorite players to watch offensively. I get tired of him whining to the officials, as I do with most NBA players, including Draymond Green, too. Luka last night, if you didn't watch the game and you tune in, you see that Steph Curry had 5 threes. Well, that's what he does. Steph Curry had 31 points. Well, he must have been the best player on the team, right? No, he wasn't. He had 11 assists. The best player on the team last night was Andrew Wiggins. You heard the dunk. He had 27-11. His defense was very good. And the Warriors went over the Mavericks in Dallas to take game three, 109-100. So now they're up 3-0, Western Conference Finals. This thing's over. Nobody's ever come back from 3-0 in the NBA in a series. So if you didn't watch the game, you go, well, you know, Luka, it's not his fault. Luka Doncic had 40 points, 11 rebounds for the Mavs. Here's an amazing stat. And this is why stats are overrated. Luka Doncic has had 8 playoff games where he has scored 40 or more points. I'll let Jason go first in the guessing game. What do you think the Mavericks' record is in those 8 games where he scored 40 or more?
Well, now that you brought it up, it's got to be bad. So I'm going to say 2-6.
Okay. Dusty, what do you think?
I was going to say 1-7.
The answer is 2-6. 2-6. Dirk Nowitzki, who is known as the best Mavericks player of all time, of course, and Dirk and Luka are pretty tight, and they're both foreign players, European players. Of course, Dirk from Germany, an outstanding player, one of the best players of all time, NBA Hall of Fame, one of the greatest 75, no doubt about it. Dirk Nowitzki had 7 playoff games. Now, granted, Nowitzki had a long career. Luka's already got more 40-point games of playoffs than Dirk Nowitzki. That's impressive to an extent, no doubt. But Dirk Nowitzki had 7 40-point or better playoff games. What do you think his record was in those games? In 7 games where he scored 41 plus, what do you think the Mavericks' record was with Dirk Nowitzki scoring 40 or more? Dusty, you go first this time.
I'll say they won 2 with Dirk, 2-5.
2-5?
I'm going to say they turned it around 5-2.
Yeah, see, you picked up on that very well. Nice job, Jason, with the sunburn
arms. I figured it was probably going to be
higher. Yes, completely opposite. It's 6-1. So when people compare Luka Doncic to Dirk Nowitzki, and I think a lot of people think Luka Doncic is going to be the greatest player ever played in Mavericks history, and he's on pace to do that. I'm not saying Luka won't, but let's just pump the brakes for a moment here. Dirk Nowitzki, 7 times in his career, scored 40 or more. That meant his team won. Luka Doncic scored 40 or more. That means his team almost always loses. So you tell me again why it's good that Luka has 40 or more. I mean, it's sensational for the selfish people out there that love the individual stats, but it doesn't help his team win. It clearly doesn't help his team win. He's 2-6. So there's 2 theories to this. One, you could say, well, the people that support Luka, he doesn't have enough help. Luka does not have enough help. And then the other way would be Luka's trying to do too much and perhaps not getting other people involved. I think it's somewhere in between. Last night, the role players for the Mavericks on their home floor, usually your role players play better at home, did not. They played very poorly. And it was Brunson, Dinwiddie, and Luka. They're the only guys that could basically score. And the Warriors, of course, had the deeper team. And Andrew Wiggins, right now, Andrew Wiggins, you could argue Andrew Wiggins is the second best player. Last night, he was the best player on the floor. He was better than Luka. Here's the thing about Luka. Last night I'm watching, and the game, Luka hits a couple of threes, and a couple breakdowns defensively on switches by the Warriors. Luka hits a couple of threes. It's a 5-point game. The Mavericks have a chance. They're down 5 with about 1:10 to go, something like that. And Luka's now on defense. Warriors move the ball around. Klay Thompson is behind the 3-point line. Luka comes, and I understand you're thinking, well, you know, Klay's a pretty good 3-point shooter. He flies out and doesn't close out properly, does Luka. Klay blows right by him, fires a pass to the near wing, pull, and I said, this going in. And pull swishes a 3. Game over. Now, everybody gets caught up in the Luka had 40 points and 11 rebounds. What a game Luka had. That defensive breakdown, and I know they wouldn't have been in that spot had he not made a couple threes. I get it. But here's the point I'm trying to make. Luka's not a complete player. Luka is, and he's not, I don't want to say he's James Harden, because Luka is a better, first of all, he don't quit on his team. Luka is definitely just as talented as James Harden was at Harden's age. But Luka's got to figure out how, and he's not a bad rebounder. He's a better rebounder than Harden. But Luka's got to figure out how to be a better defensive player. And many people believe that he needs to get in better shape to do that. And I wouldn't disagree with that. And so if you want to be a superstar in this league, which he already is, but if you want to be a championship player, and you want to take this team to different heights, if you're Luka, and if your team maybe isn't quite as good as another team, so you got to carry a lot of load, and I know that seems unfair to one person, you got to be more of a complete player. And that was a bad defensive breakdown, and the Warriors have been going at Luka because they know he's not a great defender. So the question you have to sit here and say is, how many points is Luka giving up? Well, he scored 40. What a game. Yeah, but did he allow 35 to the guys he guarded? That's not great. That's plus 5. There's a plus minus they put on the floor in every game. Obviously, he would have been minus last night because the Mavericks lost by 9. But it is something to point out. And so when you get caught up in this, wow, that's an amazing stat, man. Luka's amazing. Luka already is the greatest player in Mavericks playoff history because he's got more 40-point games than Dirk Nowitzki. Yeah, and how many rings does Luka have? And in fairness, he's just getting started.
Yeah.
But Dirk at least has a ring. But Dirk, when he scored 40 or more, Mavericks won every time but once. Luka scores 40 or more, they've only won twice in 8 games. That's not a good winning percentage. So it would behoove Luka, actually, to perhaps get his teammates involved more often. I'm not saying last night he didn't. Perhaps it's just that guys missed shots and he got him open. And then finally he said, dude, I got to do this myself. And I get it. Jordan used to do that too. You guys that wouldn't carry the load, he tried to get involved. Suddenly he's like, dude, I just got to take this thing over. So I get it. But don't you think a lot of these stats are very misleading nowadays in sports?
Oh, and I think the NBA is the top of that list.
I agree.
I mean, some of the passing stats, I guess, in the NFL when people were padding stats down three touchdowns at the end of the game and adding to their passing yards, right?
Like, Matthew Stafford was the pro of that in Detroit.
But, I mean, as far as, like, as a whole, I feel like the NBA is probably the highest on that because, I mean, these guys nowadays actually know in their mind while they're playing the game, or there's a coach that's at the game, or somebody, a player, is going to tell them what they need for a triple-double. Mm-hmm. Like Russell Westbrook, like he didn't just go out there and just accidentally get all those triple-doubles, right? It was calculated.
Yes.
And, you know, there'd be like, oh, I need another rebound here, so a big would just curl out and let him get the rebound, right? And so, I mean, that happened a lot. So, I mean, some of those numbers, yeah, they're inflated because there's actually people focusing more on him now. Mm-hmm. I think Magic just went out and got triple-doubles, right, when he got triple-doubles. Right. And obviously Oscar Robertson just got triple-doubles.
Jason Kidd got triple-doubles.
You know, those guys just did it. Grant Hill had a tear there for a little bit that he was getting triple-doubles. And so it's just like you go out and do it, but it's not – nowadays I feel like people are more worried about those numbers. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's some sense of selfishness or not, but they are. In the NBA, it's like, yeah, good game, but what did it actually do for your team?
I think when you look at some of these statistics, you have to sit here and take it with a grain of salt. The triple-double now is a devalued stat. Because what made the triple-double so great is only a few guys are able to do it on a regular basis, if at all. And so it was very unique. Now it's everybody can do it. And there'll be something that we'll get to in regards to talking about the Royals, where it used to be something that was actually common, now is unique in an inverted way. Mm-hmm. We'll explain that coming up. For those that went on a Royals bus trip, they're listening. We haven't forgot about you. We're going to talk about our trip here in just a moment. And we were going to talk about the Royals losing a 6-0 lead in the eighth inning yesterday at home in KC. We were fortunate enough to witness that. That was awesome. Anyway, the Mavericks do lose to the Warriors last night, 109-100. So the Warriors are up 3-0. That series is over. Whether or not the Mavericks can avoid a sweep. My oldest son, I have to admit, he was all over it. He said, listen, this is the greatest matchup for the Warriors. They don't have to worry about a big man that the Mavericks have. He said all along the Warriors would win the West, and he said they're better than the Suns. I said, well, I'd like to see that series, and I don't think the Suns would beat the Warriors this year based on how they were health-wise going into the next round had they beat the Mavericks in 7, but I do believe the Suns would not get swept, and I think that series probably would have gone 6, so my oldest agrees with that. But he had said as soon as the Mavericks won over the Suns, he said, this is the Warriors have to be sitting here going, this is super, because you don't have to worry about a guy like DeAndre Ayton. That's a guy that would give the Warriors problems because they don't. Now, Kevon Looney's actually stepped up and played pretty well, but it's a good matchup. It really is for the Warriors, and they are controlling the series. The Eastern Conference Finals, very unique. The Heat, I don't know how to figure this one out. The Celtics should be the better team, but they're not. The Heat had a 26-point first-half lead on Saturday night in Boston, held on for a 109-103 win over the Celtics. They have home court again. Bam Adebayo, who only had 16 points combined in the first two games, only took 10 shots combined in the first two games, which is unbelievable. He had 31 points, and he shot it 21 times, and he had 10 rebounds. And Kyle Lowry returned, which was huge for the Heat, at point guard. Jimmy Butler suffered knee injury. He left in the third quarter. Celtics still couldn't win the game at home. He's listed as questionable for game 4 tonight in Boston. Tip-off 7:30 on ABC. Marcus Smart with an ankle. Robert Williams with a knee. Both are questionable tonight with injury. So the Celtics are up against it here. And it is weird because the Celtics really controlled the first two games except for one quarter. And then the other night, the Heat, shorthanded, didn't seem to bother them. And they had this gigantic lead. And the Celtics got all the way down to 1. And you sit here and you say, the Celtics blew a golden opportunity the other night. Jimmy Butler is out. Kyle Lowry's 100% coming back. And you can't beat P.J. Tucker, who's like 30,000 years old. It is. And P.J. Tucker's done a wonderful job on Jason Tatum in Game 3. A wonderful job. So it'll be interesting to follow that tonight in the Eastern Conference Finals. Okay, we're going to go local sports. Then we're going to go to the Royals. We're going to spend some time on the Royals because there's a lot of things. If you're still a Royals fan, God bless you. Listen, if you're a Royals fan, you should be a Royals fan all the time. That's the way I look at it. If you've been a Royals fan, you should stay a Royals fan. If you're a real fan, you don't jump off a wagon. Can you complain and scream and yell and need therapy to deal with it? Yes, that's fine. I get it. Do you make fun of your team as a coping mechanism, I am the top of the list. I am the poster child for that, okay? That's the way I deal with it. And Lord knows I had to come up with a lot of funny stuff yesterday for me to deal with it around our great Royals fans that were with us on the Royals bus trip. So we're gonna hear from Mike Matheny. The Royals blew a game yesterday, absolutely just choked it away. There's no other way to describe it. And I'll tell you how I met a former Royals pitcher and what it was like for him pitching in the big leagues back in the late 70s and early 80s. And then what we saw yesterday with the pitching staff for the Kansas City Royals. And oh yes, just hang on. I got a little tirade that's coming. If you like my tirades, I've got one coming. And that's to do with a 21-year-old getting a rest in a home game and a 33-year-old guy never taken out of the lineup for rest because apparently his consecutive games played streak is more important than the team's success. I'll explain that coming up. Plus, Jason's going to update on the Cubs, which I know everybody's ready for that. The Chiefs, another veteran pass rusher, is off the market. And Justin Thomas with a crazy comeback to win a major in golf. But first, Dusty with local sports. State competitions this week.
Yeah, state track and field by the way will be coming up Friday and Saturday. And at some point this week, we'll have kind of a document put together with all of our area state qualifiers. You can go to ntksports.com and find the results from regional track and field last Thursday and Friday to see all the area athletes that have qualified for state. We've got quite a few, so we'll be keeping track of them coming up on Friday and Saturday. But in the spotlight today and tomorrow, Kansas State High School Activities Association State Golf Championships. The Sand Greens Championships are taking place today. I'm going to come back to that. All Grass Greens meets 6A through 1A will play a two-day 36-hole tournament to decide the champion. So they'll play today and tomorrow at all those places. Again, 6A through 1A. Looking at Class 2A, where the Smith Center Redmond had qualified their entire team. They're competing in Emporia. The staggered start was at 8:30 this morning. 23 groups total. The final group teeing off at 10:20 this morning. Maggie Peterson, Kane Freeling, Jake Kirkhoff, Dylan Tissell, Mason Tissell, and Nolan Lehman are the Smith Center golfers competing at state. Again, they qualified their entire team. Sacred Heart, pretty much the favorite to win 2A again in state golf here today in Emporia. And tomorrow, again, as we said, it's a two-day 36-hole tournament. Grady Walters of Osborne is qualified for the 1A state meet in Heston today. And tomorrow, Walters will be in Group 2 teeing off, and he actually has already teed off at 9 o'clock this morning. On hole 10, so he's going out there in Heston.
Four!
Today and sorry. Tomorrow. Okay. I'm looking down and was not at all prepared
for that. I know. I thought that might work. Yeah, I was like, oh, my God.
Like, what happened over here?
He said he teed off, and I was like, he went wide right, man. He sliced it.
So Grady's competing at Heston.
This is fun to mess with Class Peter 1A. In sports, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do we got going? Like what?
Last time we're talking about, you know, jokes and Ryan or Hearn or whatever, and now it's four. What are we going to do tomorrow, Jason?
I don't know. I'll have to think.
I'll leave it up to you. I'll leave it up to you to get to do it. All right. Okay.
Dusty, Class 3A.
Like, don't make this a thing.
Dusty just keeps going. Nothing happens.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm trying to actually
do my job here. We're just trying to entertain, Dusty.
3A, Caleb Burks is competing for Beloit in Salina today and tomorrow. Burks at Group 16 and took the course. He'll take the course at 10:10 on hole 10 at Salina Municipal this morning. So that's what's going on in grass green golf today. Full look at state golf info can be found at ntksports.com. We're going to go back now to the Sand Greens, which is being hosted in Downs today, and there was that threat of rain earlier this morning, so they've kind of pushed this back. Supposed to start at 9:30, so it's going to start at 11 this morning now as they push that back. And we do have a lot of area golfers that will be competing here. The Lakeside Knights are the favorite to repeat as the state champions. They've won the team title at all of the Sand Greens meets they've competed at this season, and again, playing on their home course is definitely going to help them out. Last season, the Knights won the Sand Greens title by 61 strokes over St. John's and had all five of their golfers finish in the top 10. There's a chance to see that again today if Lakeside competes the way they can. Again, competing at home has its perks. Lakeside coach Corey Booker talked about that with us, and he also feels that St. John's has kind of closed that gap and will look to challenge his squad today.
One of the big pluses of playing on your home course is you kind of have a pretty good idea where you need to hit the ball all the time. You know which side of the greens are better to approach from, and putting, you know, where you want it to be. So those are usually pretty big advantages for a team. It sure makes it a lot easier. I hope that bodes well for us, but, you know, it's golf. Anything can happen. St. John's has really coming up pretty fast on us. At several meets, they've been within 20 strokes, which is a huge jump for them from last year to this year on where they've been. So I really expect them to be the one that pushes. Hopefully we're prepared and ready to go.
In Lakeside, competing today, and again, the favorite to repeat as a state champion. We have athletes from St. John's, Tipton, Southern Cloud or Glasgow, Milton Vale areas, Pike Valley. We have athletes from all of our Sandgreens teams, Rock Hills, that are competing today at state golf there in Downs. Again, starting at 11 o'clock this morning, it's a shotgun start. They'll have 10 different holes that they'll start on and get them going at 11, and they'll roll on through after that. Just a one-day 18-hole tournament for Sandgreens.
Best of luck to all the golfers. So not only did I scare Dusty with the four in the middle of his preview of state golf, John Bowden's working on the golf course apparently, and John just texted me, because don't ever do that again. I bent over to pick up trash and I thought someone was playing in the rain and yelled four. It scared the bleep out of me. Well, you're awake now, John, aren't you? You're awake now, my man. That is funny stuff. Thanks for sharing, John. I'm glad I could scare a couple of people here today. That is absolutely fantastic.
I definitely wasn't scared, because, I mean, I've watched too many horror movies to be scared about basically anything in my life. But I was like, what happened over here?
Yeah.
Like I thought there was a fire.
Here's an example of Dusty. He doesn't play golf very much, because he'd be even more like, if I played with Wade, that's exactly what would happen. Like, four spacious skies. No. This is golf. Four. Boom. Out of there. My oldest son went out and played golf the other night. I said, hey, how many hole-in-ones did you get the other day? And he's like, oh, four or five. I said, yeah, in that big pond of water, that's a big hole. And that's where you had your hole-in-one, didn't you? He's like, pretty much right. Yeah, no doubt. Okay, speaking of something else, by the way, state track and field, we'll have updates later this week.
Yep, so that'll Friday be on Saturday.
Yeah, Friday and Saturday. So we'll talk more about that later this week as well. All local sports information, visit ncksports.com. Now, okay, Dusty thinks he's startled. John thinks he's scared. Well, what about us Royals fans that had to watch what we saw yesterday? Holy shnikes. Here, let's relive a little bit, shall we?
Line drive, base hit, and the Twins take the lead. Gio Urshela with a solid single to center. Kepler scores from third, and it's 7-6.
All right. Let me start with the positives. We had a great time on our bus trip with all of the folks. There was it was myself, my youngest, Dusty, Jason, Merrill, Ann, Melanie, AJ, John, Angela, Randy, Michelle, Emily, Ashley, Tim, Susie, Brett, Sarah, Kay, Linda, Bo, Linda, Drew, John, and some of them were his grandsons and friends of his grandsons. Man, that guy, he sat in the back on purpose with all the kids. I noticed that. But I think they had a great time. And that was really cool of Grandpa to take all the kids.
That guy deserves a medal.
He does deserve a medal. That was very cool of him. Brian and Sherry, Shannon, also Connie and Barbara and Connie's husband, Craig and Corrine, Shelby and Christopher, Irma D, Randy, Andy, Valerie, Anna, and Lois, all made it with us on our bus trip yesterday, and we had perfect weather. Couldn't have been any better. Maybe low 70s, I think it got the most. Got a little warm there towards the end, but it is May, and there wasn't really too much of a wind. And it was going so swimmingly for seven innings. And if it were a high school baseball game, the Royals would have got a shutout. And it would have been a complete game shutout for Brady Singer. But unfortunately, if this just in Major League Baseball, you must get 27 outs to win a baseball game, which means you have to play nine innings. And our webmaster, who's a big Royals fan, says, I watched the Royals meltdown on TV. It was like watching a slow-motion car wreck. You knew how it was going to turn out, but you couldn't not watch. Totally agree. No doubt about it. Let's give you the facts, and then we'll give you some of the observations. First of all, on the bus trip, thanks to everybody for going. If you haven't gone on a Royals bus trip, I encourage you to go next year, whether the Royals are good or not. Because this is the thing. Royals yesterday lost in historic fashion, and yet we still were able to laugh about it on the bus ride home. There's nobody throwing stuff and all upset the Royals lost. Yes, we were disappointed. We're frustrated, some of us. I was talking with others on the bus on the way back. But we had a really good time. And there's bigger things in life than your team losing a game or losing a 6-0 lead. There are bigger things in life, believe it or not. So you got to keep in perspective. I think as the older you get, I think you get that a little bit better than when you're young and you think it's the end of the world when your team loses a game when they're already 14 and 25. It's like, what's the diff? You're your last place. You're no good. Why not? But if you're a true fan, you want to see your team win no matter how bad you are. I remember the Chiefs were horrible, and people were like, oh, we just got to go ahead. This is great. We're going to get the number one draft pick. I'm like, no. I'm going to cheer for my team when we're 2-13. I don't care. I'm cheering for my team. I want my team to win. I don't think that's being a true fan when you're cheering for your team to lose. I feel like you're a traitor when you do that. So if you're a true fan, you want your team to win no matter what. That's the way I look at it. So yesterday, the whole trip, for me personally, the trip, the Royals bus trip was food for the soul. I mean, it was absolutely fantastic. Everybody was so nice. We had some ornery people on the bus, there's no doubt about it, including my youngest, who was going up and down and made some good money. I said he makes more than a lot of people make on an hourly basis based on the hours he worked yesterday. He did all right, and that was very nice of the people on the bus to tip their, in essence, waiter as he brought the snacks and the pop, and he grabbed the trash, and that's the hardest my 8-year-old has worked ever in his life. And I guess all I need to do is dangle a dollar bill in front of him, and I can get him to do about anything I want him to do. That was very impressive. He even grabbed the microphone a few times, and I ripped it out of my hands to talk. So he might be the next me, and if that's the case, I don't want him to be the next me, but he might be the next. He might be the successor to me down the line, and that's scary for anybody that really knows me. I know they're listening right now. One of the highlights of the Royals bus trip to me is the actual ride there. We have fun. We have trivia. We have questions. We have prizes. We have some banter back and forth. That's a lot of fun. And get to know the bus driver. I always get to talk to him and get to know who him or her that's driving our bus. It's always interesting. Our bus driver, Pat, has met Buck O'Neill a couple times. He was telling me some stories about that, which is very interesting. And he's a huge baseball fan. So that was pretty cool that he was able to. It's too bad he couldn't come in with us and watch the game, but he has to stay with the bus. So that's always fun. And then the game itself, like when we got there, we went, my youngest and I, you guys, of course, went in ahead of us with most people. We were at the end, making sure everything was on the bus okay when we got off. And so we walked all the way around, and we went by the Royals Hall of Fame. I've been in the Royals Hall of Fame multiple times, and so I wasn't really planning on going in. I overheard somebody say autographs. So I was like, well, who's autograph? And they said Dennis Leonard. I'm like, I remember Dennis Leonard back in the late 70s, early 80s. It was a really good pitcher for the Kansas City Royals. I actually met Dennis Leonard years ago when I worked in Kansas City in the summer one time doing Royals postgame stuff back in 03, but he, I'm sure, wouldn't remember me. And he was very nice and took a picture with my youngest and signed his shirt and everything else. And more on Dennis Leonard coming up, because it kind of ties in with one of the points I want to get across with how baseball has changed for good or bad since Dennis Leonard played back in the 70s and the early to mid 80s. He was a member of that Royals team that won the 85 World Series. He was hurt that year, so he didn't pitch hardly at all, but he was a member and has a World Series ring from 1985. So Cobman Stadium, there's talk about a downtown stadium is going to happen, and it sounds like it's inevitable it's going to happen. And I was talking with Bo about this on the bus, one of our he's been on our bus trip multiple times. You know, whether that's good or bad, you know, I like Kauffman Stadium where it's at. I love the scenery, the waterfalls, the fountains. I like what they've done with the renovations, all the stuff. They keep adding stuff. There's now like a barbecue place they kind of added, and then they've had more and more different stands, different drink options, more food options. Yesterday I got a brisket melt sandwich I've never had before at one place, which was kind of off the beaten path there near the concourse. There was a cheesesteak place, which I'm like, hey, that's cool. So my son and I shared one of those. Yes, it's not cheap to have any of this stuff. That's just the way it is, the ballpark. You're going to be paying at least $10 for any item, for the most part, mm-hmm. to eat. And so I always like Kauffman. I like the easy access in and out with the parking. I really like that. But there is nothing to go to when the game's over. They're like when you go at Coors Field in Denver or St. Louis, the new Busch Stadium, you can walk from the stadium. You could actually stay in a hotel somewhere down there. You can walk to the stadium. You could, after the stadium, go to the bars or the grills or the restaurants, and you can walk back. And if you've had too much, you don't have to worry about driving, get behind the wheel. There are pros and cons having a downtown stadium. Parking would not be ideal downtown, no matter where it's at. Mm-hmm. It's not ideal in Denver with Coors course field, lots of, you know, parking garages, and it takes a while to get out, so forth and so on. But if you could stay at a hotel, you have your parking already, then you could walk to the game, or the case may be, and that would be beneficial. So there's the pro of downtown stadium is that you would have a lot of stuff probably pop up around it, you know, like Kansas Speedway. You know, Kansas Speedway in Kansas, everything popped up around it. We got tons of options, right? And this is an interesting question. I've had this question for quite some time, and I don't know the answer, and Bo and I were talking about it. You know, they built, you know, Arrowhead and Kauffman Stadium, or it was Royal Stadium, then renamed Kauffman Stadium. They have the sports complex. And it's cool, pretty cool to see aerial shots, you know, on TV of both the stadiums next to each other. And I like that. But nothing has really popped up around there. Like, yeah, there's a hotel, all right? There's a Coco Key Resort that's part of the hotel. There's a Taco Bell across the street. A couple of gas stations. Why hasn't there been a whole bunch of development over in that area to where... Because, you know, you would think almost like you got so much. There is tons of parking. Like, you could easily take some of that parking land or development and actually have a few bars and grills and restaurants. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know the answer to that, because it, usually when you build it, everything pops up around it. That has not happened with the K and Arrowhead all through these years, and I can't fully explain it. I don't know if it's a Jackson County issue. I don't know if it's a taxpayer initiative, you know, getting people some breaks to get them to do it. I have no idea, but it is interesting. And then I hear, well, downtown, everything's going to pop up around it. Well, actually, there's already a lot of stuff downtown now, so I don't think you have to worry about that.
Your stadium's popping up around what's already
exactly
there.
Mm-hmm. And that
that's,
will
that's
work.
That's the point of it.
That will work.
Yeah.
But there's times where you put a downtown stadium that revitalizes, and then all of a sudden, everything's revamped around you. And then, of course, you know, Kansas Speedway, there's tons of room out there yet. If you buy the land, you could build Arrowhead, you could build a sports complex out there, and then there's, of course, lots of stuff still there, and then be even more stuff that'd pop up around it. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, then you got the Kansas versus Missouri side and leveraging each other against one another. But the bottom line is this, that right now you have Kauffman Stadium. It is a beautiful ballpark. There's no bad sight lines that I know anywhere I've sat, and I've sat about everywhere there. And you've got the bars, you got the restaurants, you've got stuff for the kids, there's kids activities. They've really made it family friendly. And that's something the Royals have to do, especially with the way the team is right now. The hot dog derby race, I love that they have people. They used to have them as just animated things on this Jumbotron. Now you actually have sometimes kids and young people that are in these suits. The if you don't know, it's the hot dog. It's the relish and the mustard. And I just want to say, I want to apologize to Ketchup and whoever was running in that costume, because I gave you the kiss of death by anointing and grabbing you as my favorite, and promptly two steps and that person wiped out in the
straight
ketchup.
Straight face plant.
Straight face plant. You couldn't do it any better than that. So my dog was out of the race right off the bat. And so then Relish had the lead, or Mustard had the lead. Relish came on, and Mustard ended up winning that. That gets people excited even if the game's no good. Although the game was good up to that point. I take full responsibility for this loss. Mike Matheny, you could send me a thank you card. But although I will say, when it was 1-0 and the bases were loaded for the Royals in the sixth inning, and Carlos Santana was at bat, I wasn't expecting much here with Carlos Santana. before he came at bat, I thought they came out to talk to the pitcher, and I thought they were going to make a pitching change. So I thought, hey, great time. I kind of need to go to the bathroom. My son and I will go up, go to the bathroom. We'll come back. We won't miss anything, even though the bases are loaded. We started walking up there, and I turned around, and they didn't change pitchers. I'm like, hey, let's just stand here at the top. Let's see what happens here. We don't want to miss this with the bases loaded. And Carlos Santana clears the bases with a double. It was a nice piece of hitting by Carlos Santana, to give him credit for once this year. And so Royals cleared the bases and so forth and so on. So we got up from our seats to go to the bathroom. The Royals scored 5 runs. I think we deserve some credit for that. So it's 6-0 the Royals. So it's 6-0 Royals, and we're going at the end of 7 innings, going into the top of the 8th. Brady Singer goes 7 innings, 4 hits. He was spectacular, 95 pitches, got a couple of jams. And so my son says he wants frozen lemonade. Well, usually the usher had come like 15 minutes prior, and it's like, why didn't you say something then? But okay. So like, fine, we'll go get frozen lemonade. That's not a problem. As hard as he worked on the bus, I'm like, that's the least I can do. So we got up, and we were looking for frozen lemonade, and 2 stands ran out of frozen lemonade, so we go to another one. And so we get the frozen lemonade, and then I said, hey, let's just sit over here where there's some empty seats, because there's a lot of empty seats. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, there's 15,000 people there. Capacity's 38,000. Only 41% of the stadium was filled. So we sit down, like second level behind home plate, in the shade, and we sit down, and it's there's runners at first and second, and Taylor Clark hasn't gotten anybody out. Next thing you know, it's 6-3. And then we're sitting there a little bit longer, and he goes, can we go back to our regular seats? I said, well, why don't we just wait till this end of this half inning? Little did I know how much longer this half inning was going to go. And Scott Barlow comes in, and I thought it. I didn't say it out loud, but I thought, you know, the Twins are probably going to hit a home run somewhere in this exchange. And if the Royals can somehow avoid giving up a home run, I think they win the game. And about 5 minutes later, the Twins hit a two-run homer, Jack, off of Scott Barlow. And it's 6-5. And this goes to what our webmaster just texted. That's when I knew what I was watching and what was probably going to happen, but couldn't turn away. Well, one, I paid money. I mean, you might as well, enjoy. Watch the game. So at the end of the inning, we go back to the Royals bus trip section with all our fans. And I said, what the heck happened? I leave and we're up 6-0. All I want to do is get frozen lemonade for my child. And now what happened? Of course, the fans are like, well, that's your fault. You went and got frozen lemonade. That's your fault. And it is totally my fault. Told my youngest, I said, actually, it's your fault. This is the parent that I am. I will not win Parent of the Year. I turned, had fun with everybody, and I said, actually, it's my 8-year-old's fault because he insisted he won lemonade. He'll never get lemonade ever again at Kauffman Stadium. And then my 8-year-old, as sharp as a tack, and got that from Mom, I'm sure, he looked at me, smiled, and says, but what if the Royals are losing? Good point. Might as well buy you lemonade when they're losing because maybe they'll start winning. I don't know. Why would I deprive my kid of lemonade if they're already losing? But if they're ever leading and he wants lemonade in the future, I'm never getting it for him ever again. Clearly, there is a direct correlation between the Royals winning and losing and what I get up to get and go do. Clearly, I have that much power. So let's get back here to, unfortunately, the game. The Royals blew a 6-run lead at home after the 7th inning in a 7-6 loss to the Twins yesterday afternoon. Brady Singer worked out a couple jams, got out of a double play in the first inning out of a jam that saved the day. He pitched 7 scoreless innings, and he deserved the win. He was fantastic. Royals used a 5-run 6th inning, as I mentioned, the bases clearing double by Santana, 6-0. Singer leaves the game. Minnesota suddenly scores 4 runs on 4 hits. Think about this for a second. Brady Singer threw 95 pitches, and the Twins got just 4 hits. Taylor Clark came in and threw 12 pitches and gave up 4 hits and 4 runs, and all of a sudden it was a ball game. Twins added a run in the 8th to get the 6-5. Well, that was actually the 2-run homer that got him to within 6-5. It was 6-3, the 2-run homer, which one of those was Clark's runner, the other was Barlow's. And then they get 2 in the 9th, and Josh Stomach comes in, gets out of things in the 8th, maintains the lead, but then in the 9th he walks the leadoff man, which is just a kiss of death. And eventually he scores. And then at that point, when it was 6-6, I'm like, just go ahead and take the lead, Minnesota, or somehow the Royals win the game in the bottom of the 9th. I didn't want to go extra innings and get back way, way late. I was being selfish at that point. So Singer gets a no decision. His ERA is 1.83. How about this for a stat? Before yesterday, this is how historic what we witnessed yesterday is, was historic. And I'm so proud to be a part of this. I'm sure everyone on the bus trip was, too. Before yesterday, teams that got exactly 7 scoreless innings from their starter and scored at least 6 runs, in the history of baseball, the record was 1,437 wins to 4 losses. It's now 1,437 wins to 5 losses. The Twins ended up finishing off a 3-game sweep of the Royals. The Royals now 14-26. This is the 40-game watershed mark that Dayton Moore always talks about. They really don't want to make any major sudden changes until at least seeing 40 games. Well, here we are. They're starting a 3-game series of the D-backs in Arizona tonight. A 40 Zach Greinke faces old team. And Zach still doesn't have a win despite an ERA of 3.48. He's 0-2. So the Twins win 7-6. They get the sweep. And here's the thing. The Twins weren't even trying to win. Byron Buxton is their best player. Absolutely. Center fielder. Having the best year. He sat out rest yesterday. Carlos Correa, their shortstop, sat out with rest. And, of course, the Royals rested a 21-year-old. Instead of a 33-year-old. More on that in a moment. That's how smart the Royals are. So anyway, Mike Matheny, on losing a 6-0 lead, all you needed was 6 outs. And his bullpen couldn't get 6 outs before they gave up 7 runs.
As frustrating as it could possibly be. You have Brady. If anyone was wondering whether or not he could go out and pitch as good as he did last time, he comes out and he's better. He gets into a bind a couple times, and of all pitches, his changeup gets him a big double play. His changeup gets him man on third, rollover with a great play by Emmanuel to force out at home. Goes through the 6th and then has a 30-minute delay, comes back out those 11 pitches to finish with 7 shutout. You couldn't begin to ask him to do anything more, and the guys were great. Big at bats. We see Carlos Santana come through, drives a few runs in, and gives us room right there to put it away. And when they're right there in front of you to put away, and you've got the back end of your pen rested, to lose one of those, I can't properly describe it.
Oh, I think there's a way to describe it. It's just not FCC allows us to say that on the radio right now. Okay, there were some people that said, well, why do you take Brady Singer out? Listen, I don't think that's the issue here. I really don't. I understand Brady Singer threw 95 pitches, and to me it makes sense in today's baseball. And plus, he did have to work out a couple of jams, and he did his job. And he's a younger pitcher, and I don't think you want to throw him out there in the eighth, and then he suddenly gets tired and gives up three runs, and then you have a – I mean, he ended on a great note. He did his job. He threw almost 100 pitches, seven scoreless innings. He did his job. And to defend Mike Matheny, and I'm probably one of the few people that's going to defend Mike Matheny today, but I'm trust me, I got other stuff for Mike Matheny, but I will defend him on this. If you're criticizing Mike Matheny because he didn't leave Brady Singer in the game to pitch the eighth and the ninth, then you have not adapted to what baseball is today. I'm not saying you're wrong in your thinking at all. I'm just saying that thinking doesn't apply anymore when it comes to managers and baseball teams because of how much money is invested in guys riding left arms on the mound. So this is what happens. In fact, I was a little bit surprised Singer came back for the seventh.
That's why I said he talked about the 30-minute delay there.
Yeah.
And I was not expecting him to come back to the seventh because of the delay. But then they scored five runs,
right,
and I think that helped him make a decision. Well, we're up 6-0, we can put him out there for another inning.
And my bullpen has been worn down quite a bit.
Yeah.
And because the prior inning, he almost had to get pulled in the sixth when he was in a jam and he got out of it. So I understand it makes sense. Here's how I'm going to defend Mike Matheny on this part. Mike Matheny is not the pitching coach. That's on the organization. That's on Cal Eldred. He is the pitching coach. The Royals fired their hitting coach recently. That really hasn't paid big dividends, in my opinion. I don't think it really ever will, per se. So you could say that the whipping boy, the next whipping boy, because Jason said he likes whipping boys. So not literally whipping boys. But anyway, he likes, a scapegoat. And so Cal Eldred could be that guy. Now, the guys that came in the pitch that blew it yesterday are guys that actually have pitched fairly well this year in the bullpen. It wasn't like Mike Matheny went to Foster Griffin yesterday. He went, who got already optioned down after one appearance. He went with Taylor Clark, who's been pretty solid. He went to Scott Barlow, who's been very good for the last couple of years. He went to Josh Domont, which was the right move when he made it, in my opinion. And then once the lead was out, he brought in Colin Snyder, who's actually been pretty decent as well. Listen, when you focus on Brady Singer should have pitched the eighth and the ninth, you've got guys in the bullpen that are being paid lots of money to get outs. That's their job as a pitcher, is to throw strikes and get outs. If the Royals bullpen that is full of pro pitchers, if the Royals bullpen can't get six outs before giving up six runs, that's on them.
Mm-hmm.
That's not on Mike Matheny. That's on them. They have a job to do. They didn't do it. And they lost. Simple as that. So let's get to a couple of things of how the game is different today. So I told you earlier that I was able to talk with Dennis Leonard. He's a Royals Hall of Famer. And Dennis Leonard, I'll pull up just to give you an idea for you younger people out there that are Royals fans that may not know much about Dennis Leonard. Dennis Leonard was a right-handed pitcher for the Kansas City Royals. And he was a very good pitcher. In fact, he received Cy Young votes a couple of years. And Dennis Leonard in his career had three seasons where he won 20 or more games, which you may never see that ever again in baseball. Dennis Leonard at the age of 26 won 20, and then 77. In 1978, at the age of 27, won 21. At the age of 29, he won 20. Okay? His career record, not bad. 144 wins, 106 losses. He started 302 games, which is insane. How about this one? 103 complete games. One out of every three starts he made, he just finished the game. Now, you're lucky if a guy gets a complete game once a year. He had 23 shutouts in his career. 1 year, 2 years, he had five complete game shutouts. Five. Two different years. Dennis Leonard, for seven straight seasons, threw over 200 innings. In 1977, Dennis Leonard threw 292 innings and struck out 244 batters. In 1978, Dennis Leonard threw 294 innings. His career ERA was pretty doggone good, 3.70. He retired after the 86 season. So I was talking with Mr. Leonard yesterday as we were getting autographed for my son on his shirt. And he's 71 now. And I remember him when he pitched there in the 80s. I don't remember the 70s. But I remember him pitching on the NBC Game of the Week against Baltimore Orioles, Dennis Leonard. Now I get to see the guy when he's 71. And he was very personable. And I said, Mr. Leonard, I said, what do you think of today's pitching? And what do you think when a six-inning start is a quality start now? And then everybody gets all excited about a guy actually going seven innings, let alone ever going eight or nine. And he kind of shook his head, and he said, you know, the game is different today. So he acknowledges that. He said, if I grew up in this era, you know, I'd deal with it, and I'd probably be fine. But in the era that I grew up in, and if then I tried to play now, it would drive me insane. And then he made a very good point, because I asked him, I said, what was the most innings you ever pitched? And he said, 295. And I looked it up, it's 294. So he has pretty good memory.
Mm-hmm.
He said, There are a lot of pitchers don't even see guys throw 200 in a season. Leonard almost threw 300 back-to-back years. So I looked up the stats here. Dennis Leonard threw seven straight seasons over 200 innings. That's called a workhorse. Mm-hmm. He did say that back then you were able to carry 10 pitchers on a roster. Now you can carry 13 or 14. So you had less arms, so you had to pitch more. Okay, he understands that. Let's put this in perspective and how the game has changed. Dennis Leonard, seven straight seasons, he threw over 200 innings. His last year in the big leagues at the age of 35, he threw 192. Do you know how many pitchers in all of Major League Baseball last year? In all of baseball last year, it was a full 162-game schedule. Do you know how many pitchers last year in all of Major League Baseball threw over 200 innings? How many do you think? In all of baseball, how many pitchers do you think threw over 200 innings? We're not talking 294. We're talking just the 200.
Mm-hmm.
I'll let Jason go first.
Just going to guess six.
Six.
Dusty. I was going to say three.
Three. The answer is four. Only four pitchers in Major League Baseball threw over 200 innings last year. Now, another trivia question for everybody out there, because I'm hooked on trivia with having it on the Royals bus trip yesterday. Have any idea how many innings the Royals pitcher that threw the most innings, how many innings do you think the Royals pitcher? It was Mike Minor, by the way. Mike Minor threw the most pitches or most innings last year for the Royals. Can you guess how many innings Mike Minor threw last year? It's obviously under 200. And Mike Minor was the Royals basically, I would argue, fourth starter.
I'm just like, I don't know how many starts I'm going to come. I'm trying to do the math in my head, right?
Sure.
And I'm like, if he had 20 starts and made it six innings in every one, that's only 180. It's not even that high. I know that. I'm going to say 170.
Okay. What do you think, Jason?
I'm going to say 150.
Yeah, you guys are right around it. 158.
Yeah.
Mike Minor rarely ever got in the seventh inning.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you're looking at pitchers nowadays. I'm being generous by saying six innings with 20 starts.
You're right. So Mike Minor last year threw the most innings of any Royals pitcher, 158, which was about half of what Dennis Leonard threw back in the day.
Yeah.
Now, how about this one? How many innings do you think the second pitcher that threw the most last year? Brad Keller threw the second most. How many innings do you think Brad Keller threw last year?
You said 158
for Minor. 158 for Minor. What do you think Keller threw?
127.
Jason?
I was going to say about 125.
Okay.
I don't know.
133.
Yeah.
So think about this. If you take Brad Keller's 133 and Mike Minor's 158, that equals 291 innings. Dennis Leonard threw the equivalent of two starting pitcher seasons in one season multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
That's how the game is different. So how do we apply it to yesterday? It is so ironic that I had a conversation with him about that. And then Brady Singer, like we talked about, we assumed he's done after six. He had about 83, 84 pitches. We just assumed he was done after six because we got trained to adapt to the way it is. So we just stated we were surprised he came out for the seventh. So Brady Singer finished the game with 95 pitches and had a complete game shutout going and a 6-0 lead. If there's ever a time to allow a guy to go get a complete game shutout, yesterday would have been the time.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, I'm not disagreeing with the decision because that's just the way baseball is now. But as somebody pointed out, why not put Singer out there to start the eighth? And if he, you know, gets a runner or two on, then you pull him. And I said, well, you are going to get the chance that he doesn't have a scoreless outing. And if it blows up in your face, people are going to say, why did you not go to your bullpen? It don't matter what you decide.
Everybody wants everything to be clean right now.
Right.
That's why you just don't see that very much.
Nope. So, Brady Singer, 95 pitches, could have come back for the eighth. Maybe could have finished the game and threw about 125, 130 pitches, which nobody wants to do that anymore, ever. And so we don't see a complete game shutout, but there's a guy that had a chance of doing it, had a comfortable lead on top of it. And we're seeing now in Major League Baseball, even guys that have no hitters. Well, that's seven innings. He's at 100. He's at 98 pitches. I decided to take him out. Didn't want to blow out his arm. And so this is the thing that we're trying to figure out from generation to generation for me. Why do pitchers not throw as many innings? Why do pitchers not throw as many pitches in a game? Well, part of it is the rules are different. The hitters are better, I think, although their averages are down this year because everybody's trying to hit the home run. Nobody steals bases anymore, so that actually helps the pitcher. Lots of guys are striking out. That helps the pitcher. But to me, and you guys can jump in and tell me what you think, I think there's a couple things at play here. One of the reasons why you don't see pitchers making 40 starts a year anymore, 200 innings anymore, guys not, having nine complete games in a season, which is the low watermark for Dennis Leonard, for crying out loud. Dennis Leonard, one year, ladies and gentlemen, started 37 games and completed 21 of them. 21 of his 37 starts, they never had to call the bullpen. So, to me, it is money.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You have so much money invested in these right arms, left arms of pitchers. You have so much money invested that you don't want to push a guy too far and then end up, he has Tommy John surgery, and then he's never the same pitcher, or he has to sit out a year. And so, it's about being very cautious and overprotective of your investments, which, think about it, you might be that way in real life. You know, if your investment is your car, you paid for, you want to take care of it, you're going to be a little bit more cautious. I know I am. I don't want to be next to somebody in a parking lot. I'll walk further away to protect that investment. Maybe it's your house. You want to protect it. Well, you probably have some pretty good insurance on your house in case something happens, so forth and so on. You know, you lock your doors when you leave the house, or you lock your doors in your car. You're protecting your investment. I get it. But that doesn't mean I have to like it. And yesterday, 95 pitches, that's it. Now you go your bullpen. Bullpen should have done its job. It did not. And you lose the game. The second thing so thoughts on that? On the pitch counts and the lack of innings thrown by starters and a high reliance on the bullpen. I mean, honestly, you're hurting your bullpen arms even more because they got to get up more often every other day. And you got starters not making it deep into games like the Royals, except that, oddly enough, their last two games, their starters have gone seven innings. Keller, seven innings Saturday night. Singer, seven yesterday, and the Royals went 0-2.
Yeah, I'm with you. That's about the investment, right? But at the back end of it, you're not really how much are you worried about the investment into the bullpen,
right?
Of what you just said, right? Like they're getting up, they're warming up. They're not throwing, but they're still getting up, warming up, and then doing all this stuff. But yeah,
how much do you value winning?
Yeah, exactly. And I see that part of it, and so. I think the Royals can always go back to Gilmesh, right? Like within their organization, where Trey Hillman wrote him to like a 122 pitch game, and he really was never the same after that.
Actually, I think it was over 100. I think it was 130 something.
Yeah, and so whatever it ended up being, I mean, that's a good example of why you don't do it anymore, right?
Sure.
Like, and the Royals have one of those right within their organization that people that were around that can remind them. I mean, Dayton Moore was here when that happened.
Let me ask you a quick question though. So if somebody's listening to you and you say that, which I get. Dennis Leonard threw 130 some pitches. Here's my question.
They gave Gilmesh.
No. I take the money out of it now. I want to go a different route here. Why didn't Dennis Leonard break down?
Yeah. I can't answer.
That's the thing I don't get. We got weightlifting.
That.
Is weightlifting a problem? Is that actually causing injuries?
I think there's actual training that's not being done right for certain sports, right?
I agree.
And I really do believe that.
Because why do pitchers break down more now than they did back when Dennis Leonard had to throw all the time? I mean, they weren't worried about pitch counts then. And Dennis Leonard, I know some of these guys are throwing 97, 98, although your starters usually aren't throwing that hard. I'm talking starting pitching. Okay, Dennis Leonard, I don't know how hard he threw. I'm sure he didn't throw 94, 95. Is it that there's so much dependence on power arms? Is that why guys are getting hurt? Because that's all we're going with is power arms. We're not going with crafty guys that can change speeds like Zach Greinke anymore. Zach Greinke is a dinosaur, okay? And he can get guys out. It actually can work. But everybody's so caught up in, I got to have a guy that throws 97 plus in the bullpen, or you're not in my bullpen. You got to be a guy that's a mid-90s fastball. Is that why guys are maybe breaking down compared to Dennis Leonard? That, I don't know this for a fact. Maybe Dennis Leonard, his fastball topped out at 90 instead of 95. Is that why maybe he lasted longer? Or is it the training that people think makes you so much stronger and builds you up so much that actually helps tear you down, and it's not the right training for a baseball pitcher?
Yeah, I feel like there can be things that go wrong no matter what.
Sure.
And we've seen that in football too, right? Like, you train so much to be big and strong up top that you're seeing more ACLs probably and things on the legs that you might not have seen back then too. I think there's a correlation between the way people train and what they're working on and the differences of what, you know, what muscles and things need to be at the peak for your particular sport, right? And so I think there probably is a little bit more focus on some things that maybe don't lend to a pitcher keeping themselves in the right shape, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, arm injuries and things like that when you're, you know, trying to be muscular and just power everything, and your body's not built to withstand all that torque, you know? We talk about golfers too, like sometimes with that stuff. And you're just not built to withstand all that, and that's why you see probably more of that. I mean, we still saw quite a few of those Tommy John things and rotator cuffs in baseball way back in the day, right? Mm-hmm. Like, people broke down, but I think, and another thing is that people, I think pitchers fought through it more,
didn't let
people know what was actually going on probably. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't know they were breaking down, but they actually were. They just powered through and they could get by, and organizations they just let them do it, right?
And there's less money involved.
And people are more about safety these days.
Right.
And things like that.
You know, I think a good example of weightlifting that maybe didn't help a player, and I've had multiple people I've talked to and people that I know in Kansas City that follow the Royals. And Alex Gordon was a really good Royals player, but he wasn't a superstar. He was an outstanding Gold Glove left fielder. He was not, his numbers statistically, offensively, aren't that great. They're pretty much normal, basically. Mm-hmm. And that's a guy that lifted all the time. And there are people that believe, and he had some injury problems from time to time, but many people believe that he overdid it. They believe he overdid it, and they think it hurt his swing, actually. So, you know, to each their own. Now, let me go to the second part that I don't like about baseball, and here's the part I really, really can't stand. And I don't like it in the NBA either. I don't like it in any professional sport. And that is, I know the Royals are in the midst of playing 19 games in 17 days. I get that. So wouldn't it make sense that if you're going to rest anybody, it would be your older guys?
That seems like what you'd want to do.
You know, Carlos Santana, I know he's not playing every day. He just came back from the IL, but he shouldn't play every day. If you're playing 19 games, 17 days, he's 36. He should have some days off, and he has, mainly because, you know, he's not a good hitter anymore. Yesterday, I am more upset about who didn't play yesterday than I am about the Royals blowing a 6-0 lead. Call me crazy. But I told our people on the bus trip, like, hey, you know, we get to see MJ Melendez and Bobby Witt Jr., two cornerstones of what could be the future of the Royals, so forth and so on. And we'll see Brady Singer pitch. Hopefully he's a cornerstone of the future, which, by the way, he's pitched the last two times, you got to say it's going in the right direction. And so then I get wind that Bobby Witt Jr. is not in the lineup. So my first thought is, well, he must have been, maybe he, you know, tweaked a hammy the night before. Maybe he turned an ankle. Maybe he's ill. Nope, just a day of rest. Bobby Witt Jr. is 21 years old. We have played 40 games, and he's now had 2 days off of not playing. And I know Willie Wilson played every single game every year. He didn't have days off. I know Frank White didn't have days off. He played every game, and they played on turf in some hot conditions, okay? and they didn't have the travel accommodations that you have now back then either. And so I'm sitting here, and I'm really ticked off because, well, Bobby Witt Jr. is getting a rest. A couple big reasons why I'm ticked off about this, and maybe you as a Royals fan listening agree with me, or maybe you think I'm making a mountain out of a molehill. Today, the Royals go on the road to play the Arizona Diamondbacks. Now, let's just be frank with one another. If you're a sports fan, you're a Royals fan listening right now, we can all agree the Royals suck. Right? So, in the economy that we have today, with the inflation that we have today, we have gas prices that are high, and of course, it costs quite a bit to buy anything at Kauffman Stadium or any Major League Baseball ballpark. You have to pay for parking. You got to pay, you know, $12 for a beer if you want a beer. Granted, you don't have to buy anything. You can go in, and maybe you somehow you have your bottle of water you take in that they allow you. How nice of them to allow you to take in a bottle of water unopened. That's so sweet of them. To me, you should be able to take a 12-pack of water in there. And then you could refill that water bottle in the bathroom. And you know what? You might not have to pay a penny for anything in the stadium. But usually you want to get something. You know, the game's going to last 3 hours or so. You're going to want to eat something. You're going to get a $10. If you want a combo meal, it's $15. If you want a pretzel, that's $8. If you want a frozen lemonade, that's $7. You want Dippin' Dots, that's $9. If you want a cheesesteak, it's $13 with taxes. By the way, the taxes are even higher on top of the... You see the price of $12.05 for a cheesesteak? My total was $13.36. Yeah. For a cheesesteak, that's it. Nothing else.
$9 after taxes if you just want the souvenir cup with a soda in it, right? With
right.
a pop.
Right. That's for a pop. Yeah. And so you have your choices. You don't have to spend a lot of money. But my point is this. Right now, if you're a Royals fan or any baseball fan, the Royals need to be selling you on why you should spend your hard-earned money to attend a Royals baseball game. Now, why? I'll give you an example to just put it in perspective here. Why should somebody from North Central Kansas drive to Kansas City to watch the Royals play? Right now.
Bobby Witt Jr. and MJ Melendez play baseball.
Those would be the top two guys.
That's where I'm at right now. Why I wanted to go yesterday. I mean, obviously the bus trip would be part of that, but as far as the product on the field, that's what I wanted to see.
In regards to the product on the field, you want to see Zach Greinke pitch because he's back with the Royals, but it's Bobby Witt Jr. and MJ Melendez. Those are the two young players that many people think are top prospects that could be great players. Those, if you're worried about the product on the field and you want it, that's the reason to go see them. You're not going to see the Royals because you think they're going to win all the time. Clearly not. You're not going to see the Royals because their bullpen is lights out like it used to be. You're not going to see the Royals because they just tear it up and steal bases like they did with Gerard Dyson. We don't see that. You're not going to see the Royals because they hit tons of homers. You're not going to see the Royals because they score a lot of runs. You're not going to see the Royals because they have this unbelievable pitcher named Justin Verlander or Clayton Kershaw, right? Mm-hmm. Or Max Scherzer. So you're either going for the experience, which is great, which the Royals, I think, do a pretty good job with the experience, as I described earlier, or you are going to see certain people on the field that you want to watch play because the Royals are so bad. And Dusty and I are in the same boat. What I looked forward to yesterday was the bus trip, obviously, was going to be fun. I knew it would be, and I was looking forward to it. But if Dusty and I didn't have a Royals bus trip lined up, and right now the Royals had a home game tonight, what is there that is going to draw me to spend my money, get in a car, spend $4 a gallon in gas to go to KC and watch the boys in blue? What's going to entice me? And quite honestly, Dusty and I are real baseball fans, so we're not worried about hot dog dollar night, you know, buck night or whatever. But if that's what appeals to you, that's fine. I can go buy a whole bunch of hot dogs and have it for less than $1 a hot dog, you know, at home and save my $4 a gas. But if that's what appeals to you, fine. Or fireworks, you know, fireworks on a Friday night or whatever, I get it. But in regards to the product on the field, the only thing I'm going to watch, that I want to watch, is Bobby Witt Jr. is number one on my list, and number two is MJ Melendez. And then after that, it's probably maybe a Brady Singer or something like that, or Zach Greinke. Yesterday, we are going to the game, and I find out that Bobby Witt Jr. is not playing because he's having a day off. Now, I'm not opposed to guys having a day off, per se, in fullness. But I have a major problem with this. And you guys can tell me if I'm overreacting. We've established the Royals stink. We've established there's not a lot of reason to go watch the Royals play in regards to the product on the field. That Bobby Witt Jr. and MJ Melendez are probably the two draws. So if you're going to rest Bobby Witt Jr. for a game, why in the hell don't you do it tonight when they're in Arizona? Because you don't owe Arizona fans jack.
No.
But your fans that help pay for a stadium and renovations over the years in Jackson County, Missouri, or anybody else that wants to go to a Royals game, you decide that a home game, an afternoon game that was not 99 degrees out, by the way, it was about 68 to 72, you decide that Bobby Witt Jr. needs a break, and I'll bet you Bobby Witt Jr. didn't volunteer to take the day off. So you're going to sit out Bobby Witt Jr. because day of rest, which we've now played 40 games, and Bobby Witt Jr.'s played 38. He's on pace to play, what, 140? 145? It's a 162-game season. Imagine if George Brett, perfectly healthy. Yeah, George, we're going to rest him, you know, every 10 days. Why? Do you want to win? Here's my question to the Royals organization. Do you want to win? Do you give 2 cents about your fan base? Because that decision yesterday to me is, it ticks me off. And here's another step further why it ticks me off. And this is why I question whether the Royals really want to win or not. So Bobby Witt Jr. apparently needs the rest for a game in Kansas City. The hometown fans are deprived watching Bobby Witt Jr., who is perfectly healthy, we're deprived of watching him play. I love Whit Merrifield, okay? I've always been a big fan of Whit Merrifield. I think he's a late bloomer, and he's a very good player. Whit Merrifield, why is he playing every single day? And why didn't he get a day off when he couldn't hit the ball at all and was hitting a buck 20? Why hasn't Whit Merrifield been given a day off? And by the way, he's 12 years older than Bobby Witt Jr. And you know what the comeback is that I've heard? Well, Whit Merrifield has this consecutive game streak that he's played. It's up to 500 and some games. Well, I'm just going to go out on a limb here and call my shot. He's not going to get the Cal Ripken Jr.'s record of 2,632 games played. You know how I know that? Because he'd have to play 2,100 more games consecutively, which would mean that he would have to play about 13 more seasons, which means Whit Merrifield would have to play every day until he's 46.
Not going to happen.
Not going to happen.
Not going to happen.
Way to go on a limb. I hear you.
Yeah.
Not going to happen. So what are we trying to accomplish with Whit Merrifield playing every day? If you say, well, Whit Merrifield gives us the best chance to win, that's why he's out there every day. So Bobby Witt Jr. doesn't? So that's hogwash. Let's be honest with each other. The only reason Whit Merrifield is not getting a day off, and he needs it much more than Bobby Witt Jr. He's 33. Bobby Witt Jr. is 21. He's had 2 days off this year. Whit Merrifield's had 0 days off, and he's been struggling worse than Bobby Witt Jr. was. Whit Merrifield is 33. He's a decade older than Bobby Witt Jr. You're telling me 21-year-old can't play every day? I'm confused by this. And he's the marketing tool of the Royals right now, and should be. And I understand Salvi getting a rest. He's 32 and plays behind the plate. That makes total sense to me. Although, why not save it for the road games there, too, to be honest with you? Why can't it be a road game where you save your guys the off day? Let your hometown fans actually see your best product. Don't they deserve to see the best complete team you have out there with the money that they pay? Don't you think? I believe so. So, Whit Merrifield has not missed a game this year. So, here's my question. If Whit Merrifield is not getting a day off, and the reason is because he has a consecutive games streak, but yet is hitting .210, mm-hmm. and that's actually the best he's been all year. He's not a gold glover. He's a solid defensive player. He made a great play yesterday at second. He's now played over 500 consecutive games for the Royals. That's the longest active streak in Major League Baseball, but he's 2,100 behind the all-time record. If you truly are trying to win, why are you resting Bobby Witt Jr. at the age of 21 in a home game, depriving your fans of watching him play, and not a road game where he rests. And yet you shove Whit Merrifield out there every day, which I'm okay with him being out every day as long as Bobby Witt Jr. is also out there every day.
That's the key to that.
Yeah. Right.
I have no problem on the of the concept of Whit playing every day.
Me neither.
Because I don't think Whit Merrifield, I don't think there's anybody else that I would want playing his spot.
Sure.
And he's versatile and can play a lot of different places.
Right. So there's a place for him on the field all the time because of that multidimensionality. But here's the thing. If you're resting Bobby Witt Jr., you should be resting Whit Merrifield before Bobby Witt Jr. That's my point. And if you're telling me, well, the reason Whit Merrifield plays every day is because we're trying to win, then that makes no sense why Bobby Witt Jr. is resting for a second time in 40 games. And also, that also tells me that you're more worried about a player's streak of consecutive games played than actually winning. Because if you cared about winning, Bobby Witt Jr. wouldn't be sitting yesterday. If you cared about winning, this is just my opinion. I think you guys agree with me, but we'll see. Bobby Witt Jr. plays every day if you want to win. He gives you he's your best shortstop on the team right now. Mondesi's hurt. He's your best all-around player. He's got the most speed. There's so many reasons why Bobby Witt Jr. should play every day as long as he's healthy. There is no reason Bobby Witt Jr. should be sitting on a Sunday afternoon when it's 70 degrees outside and never even come off the bench to pinch run or pinch hit or do anything. He didn't play. He didn't even make it onto the field yesterday. Bobby Witt Jr., age of 21, needs a rest more than Whit Merrifield, and that is just absolutely insulting to fans. Mm-hmm. Whit Merrifield, if you're telling me the reason Whit Merrifield is in the lineup every day is because you are trying to win, then that makes no sense why Bobby Witt Jr. is resting. If you tell me Whit Merrifield is out there every day because we want to keep his streak going, now you don't give a you know what? I almost cussed there. You don't give a bleep about winning. Because if you really cared about winning, you would get Whit Merrifield a day off before Bobby Witt Jr.
Yeah.
So that's a crock, and I'm ticked about it. Because our fans that went on the Rose bus trip should have seen Bobby Witt Jr. play. And as I said, it's one thing that they want to – I don't like the Bobby Witt Jr. rest at all. He shouldn't sit any game if he's healthy. But I'll at least listen to, okay, he needs a day off to mentally recuperate. Do it tonight!
Yeah.
When they're in Arizona, not when they're in Kansas City. We get 81 home games. He should play in every one of those home games if he's healthy. If he wants to take 10 road games off, fine. You don't owe it to any of the other opposing fans. I'm sorry. If the Cubs want to see Bobby Witt Jr. and they're in Chicago with Wrigley Field and Bobby Witt Jr. doesn't play, you don't owe jack to the Cubs. But your fans that pay season ticket money and fans that pay to go to a Royals bus trip and people that pay to go in at any point in time and the only couple things that draw you to watching the product on the field, and one of those is Bobby Witt Jr. or, and like I said, MJ Melendez, until Salvi got hurt, he was playing like every other day, which is stupid. What are you doing? What is the goal of this Royals organization? Do you want to win? Then Bobby Witt Jr. plays. Do you want to get the longest streak in Major League Baseball history? Then that means Whit Merrifield is never going to leave this lineup until he's 47. Are we going to just roll Whit Merrifield out there when he can't hit and he can't run and he can barely walk? Are we just going to roll Whit Merrifield out there for the next 15 years to get a record? What the hell is the point? You got a long streak. Congratulations. What does it mean? Congratulations, Whit. You've played in 540 consecutive games, and your team's record is 200 and 340. Wow! You won 40% of the games you played in, and you played every day. It's kind of an indictment on you. Even though, in fairness, it isn't, because there's other players on the field. It is so maddening to me. It upsets me so much. Because I am trying to stay true royal. But when you do dumb things like that, you don't care about the fans. You don't. You don't. Be consistent. If Witt Jr. needs a break, fine. You don't think a 33-year-old guy named Whit Merrifield needs a day off when he can't get on base for basically a whole month? You don't think he needs a mental break? It's insulting.
Yeah, it's absolutely insulting. There's two things on that. I'm going to start just with the fan angle of that real quick, because I, in the middle of the week last July, went down to Wichita to watch the Northwest Arkansas Naturals play the Wichita Wind Surge, right? I went for one reason. And I waited purposely to get my ticket until the Monday of that week to make sure that Bobby Witt Jr. was still going to be in AAA, or AA, I mean, and wasn't going to AAA yet. And so that was the sole purpose for me to go to Wichita on a Wednesday night, was to watch Bobby Witt Jr. play baseball, because I knew it was my only chance to watch him in Wichita in AA before he went to AAA Omaha. So I made that decision. Now, I think he actually was close to that All-Star Features game. So I knew I didn't want to go on Sunday because he probably wouldn't be there when they finished out the series. I'm like, I better go in the middle of the week because I don't know when he's going to leave for the All-Star break, and he's never coming back to AA when he's gone. It's over. Like, that's my only chance, but I wanted to make sure he was still going to be there. We went to AAA like 2 weeks later, but he was there. I was able to go down. He was in the lineup as expected, and a lot of people got to watch him play in Wichita that purposely went to Wichita for that reason only. Now, I got a treat to see MJ Melendez hit a bomb and understand that, oh, this guy might – this guy is probably, if he could keep doing what he's doing, is our catcher of the future. He's the next Salvi, right?
Sure.
And then, I wanted to see Nick Prado play too. I wanted to see the future. And the future is now for some of these guys with the Kansas City Royals. They are on the roster. This is why we were complaining and moaning a couple weeks ago about MJ Melendez being up and not playing every day. And it took an injury to Salvi for him to actually get in the lineup every day.
Yeah.
Like, what do you have him sitting on the bench for if you're not going to play him? This is the same thing. You're 21-year-old, almost 22-year-old, phenom, superstar, number one prospect in Major League Baseball is finally on this team, and people are making plans. The difference about Major League Baseball is this guy's on the roster. You expect him to play. You're not expecting him to get sent down to AAA. You're buying a ticket. I had some people from Beloit that were at a bachelor party yesterday, right, that I knew, that went to St. John's, and they went out. They came out for the baseball game. They probably were like, hey, let's go watch Bobby Witt Jr. and the Royals play for this. But the difference with this is that lineup doesn't come out until, like, well, for a 1 o'clock game, about 9 to 10 in the morning, right? You don't know that until that lineup comes out. If they're not on the DL, if they didn't have an injury the night before, you're expecting them to play and be out there.
Especially when you're 21.
Like exactly. And so it's just like, that's what you can't – fans can't change their plans because it's so quick that the game starts after that lineup comes out. And then you've deprived all those fans. And again, there was only 41% capacity, but that's still 15,000 people, and I'll bet about 10,000 of them wanted to see Bobby Witt play. Oh, there's a lot of Twins fans there, so I'm not counting them. But so that's part of it.
Twins fans that want to see him play too.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. But it's not, for them, that's not why they made the trip. They came to see the Twins play, right?
Right.
And it might have been an added bonus to see one of the better Royals players too, because I've done that before. But that's that part of it. The other part of it is on the Whit Merrifield thing. Whit Merrifield's running that part of the show right now because he made a comment last week. He's like, I'm not interested in sitting out any games. I'm playing all these games. Like, I'm pretty sure he's running that part of the show. Like, Mike Matheny has no choice on that. And
he doesn't have
a backbone.
What's Whit
going
to
do?
If you're a manager and you have no backbone to tell a guy, hey, man, you just need to sit one out, then that's on the manager. Yeah, not Whit Merrifield. He don't run the team.
Yeah, he has a choice, but I don't know if John Sherman's telling him, nah, he's got to play. If J.J. Piccolo's telling him, no, he's got to play. If Dayton Moore's telling him, no, he's got to play. I don't know if Matheny's just doesn't have a chance to get his words in and say, hey, he's not going to play today.
Yeah.
I don't know how that dynamic is going, but manager's tasked with making that lineup, so it comes down to him.
Whose idea do you think it is to rest your 21-year-old phenom?
That's Mike Matheny. It's got to be, doesn't it?
I would think
Like I said, I mean,
but
he's
tasked
with putting the lineup together. I don't know why he needs a rest.
So you don't have the backbone to stand up and tell Whit Merrifield, dude, it's time for you to sit down. But you can tell Bobby Witt Jr., who's a better player, honestly.
Yeah.
He's a better all-around player than Whit Merrifield right now. Honestly, he is. His numbers even prove
for sure, yeah.
Already, he's a better player than Whit Merrifield. Now, Whit, I think, has declined, obviously. Now,
yeah,
he might,
power.
Whit might figure it out.
Yeah.
Whit might figure it out.
And he's gotten better.
He's come on a little bit lately, but... I mean, to me, that's another problem with this organization.
Yeah.
If the manager can't stand up to a player and say, you need to sit because I've given other guys a break, you need one. You have to take one. I'm sorry. I know you want to play really badly. You don't think Bobby – here's the thing that I don't like. If Whit Merrifield says – and we don't know this for sure, but if Whit Merrifield's sitting here saying, I'm not sitting out, coach, all right? I'm the leader of this team, and we got to turn it around, and I can play every day, and I'm not sitting. Bobby Witt Jr. tells Mike Matheny, coach – you know, with all due respect, I feel great. I don't need a day off. Shouldn't the manager respect that as well?
Should.
But so he thinks it's better for a 21-year-old to sit on his keister.
Yeah.
At a home game. He thinks it's better for the team. Really? That makes no sense.
No, it doesn't. But and on the other side of that, there's something that's established there with Witt. Probably feels like he's got seniority, and Mike Matheny probably feels that too.
Sure.
If he doesn't feel that, he wouldn't be sending Carlos Santana out there every day to start at first base.
He says, like, we pay Carlos Santana to play first base. And you also paid a hitting coach to be a hitter coach, and you fired him.
So. And I'm going to guess that his comeback with Witt would be, well, we're paying him to play every day. I mean, he would say
Bobby
something.
Wade Jr.
I know.
Too.
Like, he would say something like that. That would not make any sense, but he's just trying to justify whatever's going on. But I'm 100% convinced that Witt's making that decision, and they're not forcing him out of that decision.
Because they feel guilty that they didn't let him play second to start the year?
Yeah, and maybe they feel guilty that they've just not let him be in one spot like he wants to be.
I'm gonna tell you this.
Let him play every day, since we're not doing that.
This might be a bit, I don't know if it's controversial, but Dayton Moore is a very, very likable guy. He's a very religious person. He's a very nice guy. And they've always said, well, nice guys finish last. Well, no, the Royals won the World Series in 15. They made the World Series in 14. But I do think that the Royals don't run their organization like a cutthroat business it needs to be. And I think there are some people
for a lot of years.
Yes, for many years. And I go back to when they won the World Series in 15. Yeah. They wanted to, you know, keep the band together and go for it in 16. And I was okay with it. I get it, you know. You don't break it up and blow it up like the Marlins. But when you got to the trade deadline in 16, the Royals had chances to trade some guys and get something for them. It was kind of, the writing was on the wall that the Royals were going south, all right? You could see it. And you knew you weren't going to be able to keep Hosmer and Moustakas when they were up for contracts and everything else. So it was, that was the time to start the rebuild. And Dayton Moore, instead, gave Alex Gordon, that was the first mistake, as we all knew at the time it happened, we knew it was a mistake, is, well, we love Alex because he hit a home run to tie the game in game one of the World Series, and he's been loyal to us, and we've jerked him around from third base to left field. So we're gonna give Alex Gordon all the money, not Ben Zobrist. Ben Zobrist would have been a better fit for this team, and we said it at the time. Then they gave money out to all kinds of people that were on that team. They gave more money to Lorenzo Cain. They gave more money to Salvador Perez. Chris Young came back, which they really didn't need to do, but they did. They gave him. They wasted money with him. I could go on and on and on. And I think it's because Dayton Moore and the Royals are, one, it's okay to be loyal, but it's blind loyalty. You're not running it as a business. You know why the Patriots are so good? I've said this 1,000 times. And this is why I think the Chiefs are very smart for trading Tyreek Hill, is that the Patriots know when to say bye. Through the years when they won Super Bowls, they knew when to walk away. And sometimes they hurt players' feelings. Oh, there's no doubt. There's players that were mad. They talk about how, oh, it's not fun playing for Belichick. And oh, he's a dictator. I mean, there's all kinds of things that people said. And you know why? Because they're sore because they got cut. But deep down, they probably knew that was the right move for the Patriots. Because you know what? They're sore because they knew that the Patriots are the best place to win a ring. Mm-hmm. And so now they weren't part of that, and they were mad because the Patriots didn't give the money that you wanted, and you wanted more money and more money. You got greedy, and because of your greed, the Patriots said, see you later, just like Tyreek Hill's greed. Instead of playing Patrick Mahomes, you play with Tua. We'll see how that works out. So Tyreek Hill says, I got a ring. I'm going to get greedy. I'm going to get my money, and the Chiefs are probably going to give it to me. Oh, wait a minute. They aren't? Well, then I'm going to be traded. Great. You've been traded. Chiefs move on from you. That's part of the business. The thing to me with the Royals is they didn't know when to walk away and move on from players. That's what started this. I, for the life of me, and I didn't pull it up, but Dayton Moore doesn't have hardly any winning seasons as president of baseball operations / general manager. This is first year as baseball operations president, whatever. He's not technically the GM. And I sit here and I look at other small market teams. Why can the Twins somehow be bad for a few years and then right back near the top of the division? Why can the Tampa Bay Rays and the Oakland A's, who have nobody coming to their games, how can they be like average for a year or two? Maybe sometimes they're not even this bad, but then somehow they're in the playoffs a few years later, or they're good enough to compete. Why are the Royals have a three-year window, 13, 14, and 15? 16 was average, okay? They actually were 80 and 82 in 16. Okay, that's a losing season. Why is it that the Royals are the only organization in Major League Baseball that I can see that tend to just be bad for so long? Why can't they figure out? Like, I understand the ebbs and the flows. I get it. Like, even Bruce Weber had ups and downs and quicker spells than the Royals did. So I understand the ebb and the flow, the up and the down, the roller coaster. I'm prepared for it as a small market baseball fan of the Kansas City Royals. What I don't understand is, why am I not seeing any progress? 7 years after the Royals won a World Series. I mean, we're pushing now a decade. We're on the other side now. Mm-hmm. We're 7 years, and this is what I see. I watch a bullpen blow a 6-0 lead. I see Mike Matheny not playing Bobby Witt Jr. at a home game when he's 21 and healthy. You know, I see a guy going out there that continues to stink, and he's batting cleanup like Ryan O'Hearn or Carlos Santana. Or I'm seeing Whit Merrifield doesn't ever get a day off. He needs a day off. He's too stubborn, probably too proudful, and I don't have anybody that has the guts to tell him, listen, Whit, you're not running this organization. Sit your butt down for a day. You know, somebody in this organization's got to take charge. And I do believe that sometimes the Royals organization is just so nice and so fuzzy and warm and fuzzy. And there's good things about that. Don't get me wrong. But in regards to winning right now, that ain't working. Mm-hmm. That ain't working. And there are people right now that are asking themselves, and they've been asking out loud, and there's more and more heat on Dayton Moore and J.J. Piccolo and John Sherman, and rightfully so, to say, who's in charge? Who's really making these decisions? Dayton Moore recently said, well, J.J. Piccolo is the one that wanted to fire the hitting coach. You know, he made his case. And so if Dayton Moore was in charge, you wouldn't even have had a change at hitting coach. Mm-hmm. Like, Dayton Moore is so loyal to so many people. And it worked out for him to an extent, no doubt, winning the World Series in 15. Was that a little bit of luck here and there? Sure. And maybe you make your own luck. But Dayton Moore, his history with the Kansas City Royals, they hardly have any winning seasons, but they do have a championship, and they did have a two-year window where they went nuts, and they went to the World Series back-to-back years. But that doesn't mean Dayton Moore should get a free pass right now.
No.
I mean, to me, that has all worn off. Your job is to make us competitive, do another rebuild. We should be right now, honestly, the Royals right now should be at least a 500 team.
This is supposed to be 2013.
Exactly.
Like the old
the year before the Royals made
process,
the moves.
Right?
Yes, right.
Yeah.
That's what it's supposed to be.
When we came into the season, that's what I was expecting, because that's what kind of the path looked like.
We kept hearing 23, 24, 22, 21 should be steps up.
Yeah.
And we're not seeing it. In fact, we're going backwards.
Yeah.
Now, what's up with that? Is that bad development? Is it bad scouting? Is it bad drafting? Is it bad signings? Is it that we don't have any money to go get a real big player, a big bat, or a great pitcher? Is it John Sherman's too tight now with the ownership group, with all the people? There are too many pans in the pot when it comes to all the owners that are part of the ownership group of the Royals. I think that is a problem, by the way. Dayton, who's really taking charge here? That's my question. Who's running?
Who's Sherman's running? Supposed to be the one, because he's the majority owner.
Supposed to be. Yeah. But is he? Does he got the guts to do it? Yeah. You know, I don't think he has the guts to fire Dayton Moore, obviously, and I don't think Dayton Moore has the guts to fire Mike Matheny, and I don't think the Royals right now even have the guts to fire their pitching coach. And by the way, Brady Singer goes to Omaha for 3 weeks without Cal Eldred, comes back, and he's better. That's not a good look for Cal Eldred. What pitchers Cal Eldred made better?
Process.
What pitchers Cal Eldred made better that's got over the hump? People are talking about Daniel Lynch. There's one. Congrats. Should be more than one.
And that's not consistent.
No, it's not.
Not even close.
Carlos Hernandez has gone backwards since he was with Big League Club. Who was the pitching coach? Cal Eldred. Brady Singer went backwards with this club, Cal Eldred. He goes to the minors for 3 weeks, figures out some things, must have a better pitch. Hey, fire Cal Eldred, bring up the AAA pitching coach. He at least has just as many pitchers he's fixed compared to Eldred. Now, I'm not saying that's going to solve everything, but the Royals, I just don't feel like they have the guts to really, truly do something. I guess the hitting coach was a big move, and it sounds like Dayton Moore wouldn't have even done that. Somebody's got to take charge. Derek Nestor, our web guy, said yesterday, fire everybody on Twitter. I thought that was funny. No, we don't have to fire everybody, but I'm going to tell you something. There's got to be accountability. And I don't know anywhere in this organization where there's accountability. To me, there's got to be accountability for Whit Merrifield not performing and yet insisting to play every day. You know what? Here's a thought. You need to start performing better, or you're not on the field. It's not my fault that I rest you and I put you on the bench for a game or two. It's your fault because you're not performing. All right? I'm playing Bobby Witt Jr. at shortstop, and Nico Lopez playing second, and your ass is on the bench. That's what I would be doing. Like, Bobby Witt Jr. is the future, and he's playing better than you right now anyway, Witt. Or I put Witt in right field and Dozier DHs, and then Melendez behind the plate, and Rivero doesn't see the field. Whatever. But I got to have Bobby Witt Jr. You know what? Bobby Witt Jr. needs a day off. I think he can handle hitting the ball 4 times. Make him DH. Mm-hmm. At least I get to see him hit. I don't even get that. And then there's a pinch hitting moment, and I get my favorite player, Ryan O'Hearn, instead of Bobby Witt Jr. At least he didn't strike out. So I am at a loss for words. Who is running the organization? Who's going to make tough decisions? They're 14-26. Stop with the delusional, we still have a chance to win this division. Technically you do, but you're full of it. You just played the first place team that you got to catch, and they swept you. They didn't even play their best players, and they beat you. It's so frustrating. Well, Dayton won a World Series. Let's cut him some slack. That was 7 years ago, people. Imagine. Yeah, you know, the Royals suck for 30 years. Yeah, you know, we got that World Series in 85, so it's all good. Now, I did say this when the Royals won the World Series in 15. Would you rather win a championship and stink for 20 years and then maybe be competitive again? Or would you rather be competitive for 20 years knowing you never win at all? And I said that I would rather win it all because I would have that moment where we won it all, and I would be willing to deal with a whole bunch of bad baseball if I knew we could win it all every 20, 30 years. I would deal with it. Well, here we are. I'm getting my wish. And honestly, I'll deal with it. I'm not going to say I'm not a Royals fan. I love that we had 14 and 15. Lots of teams haven't had World Series. I mean, the Cubs went forever without one. The Red Sox went forever without one. Okay, I know Pirates, of course, and there's so many teams that are, you know, A's haven't won one for a while. Obviously, it was the 80s. But there has to be accountability. Like, I'm okay if the Royals stink, but at least make it make sense. Like, if you're going to stink, Bobby Witt Jr. shouldn't be on the bench while we stink. Mm-hmm. That's all I can say.
Yeah, it's all of the above, the problems that you're talking about, why this team's not moving forward. And, you know, injuries to people that you think are going to be key players, I would add to that list too.
Modestly.
Right? Yeah, and so it's changed the dynamic, whether they're training right, what are they doing, are they doing that the right way?
Why can't you develop your college pitchers that you're trying to speed to the big leagues? That's why you drafted college instead of high school. Why can't you develop them? How do you get pitchers that end up wanting to quit baseball like Ash Russell? Wasted draft pick. I mean, maybe that's bad luck. I don't know. All right. Time for a Cubs update with Jason.
5-4, brought to you by Kanye West, Chicago native.
Cubs won?
Cubs won.
Oh, okay. Well, gee, yeah. Give me that.
Oh, sorry.
5-4.
Put the winning score for two.
At least he does
Cubs
that.
Cubs first, right?
There you go.
And Cubs win. They were able to withstand getting swept. So 1-2 over the weekend.
Better than what the Royals did. All right. Chiefs talk here real quick. Defensive end Jadeveon Clowney has agreed to re-sign with the Cleveland Browns on a one-year contract worth a maximum of $11 million after enjoying one of the best seasons of his career with the franchise. He had 9 sacks, 2 forced fumbles for the Browns last season. There were some people who thought the Chiefs maybe would be able to go after Jadeveon Clowney. That's another veteran pass rusher that is off the market. Jerry Hughes, I believe, is still out there, and we're starting to run out of those guys available. So people are wondering, as Chiefs fans, what was Plan B if you didn't get Melvin Ingram? And so far, we have not seen what Plan B is, unless Plan B is to depend on the guys you drafted to become pass rushers. And really, there's only one legitimate pass rusher that they drafted. So there are reasons to be concerned in the one area to me, and that is pass rush for the Kansas City Chiefs. Over the weekend, and we didn't see any of this because we were at the Royals bus trip, but it was pretty exciting stuff.
5 years later, after his win at Quail Hollow, it's just in time. Again at the PGA Championship.
Justin Thomas won a three-hole playoff. He won over Will Zalatoris at the PGA Championship in Tulsa yesterday. The win for Thomas, his second major. He won the PGA 5 years ago. He was 7 strokes off the lead, and after his third round, he said he thought that there was a chance that he could come back. He usually knew down 7 strokes around the final round, and 6 people are in front of you on the leaderboard, you really have no chance. But he knew that everybody in front of him on the leaderboard didn't have an experience dealing with closing out a major, whereas he has. Mm-hmm. So he knew there was a chance that maybe if I just put together a good round, and he did. And he was off the lead by 7 strokes entering yesterday, but Pereira, the leader, shot 5 over in round 4, and Thomas rebounded 3 under to tie Zalatoris, and then he birdied 2 of the 3 holes to win the 3-hole playoff for the championship. So your winner is Justin Thomas for the second time at the PGA Championship. And finally in sports, the 2-time defending champion Tampa Bay Lightning seem to be on pace for maybe winning a third.
Just past the midway point, second period, 2-1 lead for Tampa Bay.
You know, it's interesting. I remember the Tampa Bay coach saying after last year they were going to have to break up the team some. after they won the Stanley Cup 2 years in a row, I saw the interview, and he said, you know, we're not going to be as good next year. I mean, basically he was setting it up to say this is kind of a mini rebuild. It wasn't a reload. And he was talking about how we're going to lose some key guys because that's just the nature of the beast. You get really good, people are going to go get some of our players. We can't re-sign everybody, so forth and so on. And, you know, people can't expect us to win the Stanley Cup every year. Well, I don't know. Maybe they can. I mean, until the Kraken finally lift up there what they can do. The Lightning are up 3-0 on the number one seed in their conference. 3-0. They have a chance to sweep. They won in Tampa 5-1 yesterday. They can wrap it up tonight. At 6 o'clock on TNT in Game 4, they can finish it out.
Yeah,
that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's what I'm so used to having at least a day off, maybe two or three, and I was like, they're playing again tonight. They're ready to get out there and just sweep them.
What a concept! Play back to back nights. In the Eastern Conference second round, the Rangers won 3-1 over the Hurricanes. Carolina's up 2-1 in that series, and the Oilers did the same against the Flames, winning 4-1 in Edmonton. Tonight, the Avs have a 2-1 lead on the Blues. Game 4 at 8:30 on TNT. The Avs try to take a commanding 3-1 lead in that round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. A quick programming note for all you KU men's basketball fans. There is going to be a special that we hopefully can get on the air for you on Thursday night. There's a one-hour national championship special with Bill Self. It'll be on Z96.3 Lake from 6 to 7. It's a one-hour show. So if you'd like to listen to that, mark your calendar. Thursday night, this Thursday, May 26th at 6 o'clock, the 2022 Kansas Jayhawk National Championship special with Bill Self. So for all you fans out there that you're Royals fans, but you're KU fans, at least you had that. So they can smooth over the problems with the Royals. Or you have the Chiefs, so that maybe helps with the Royals and so forth and so on. And once again, a big thank you to all the people that helped us with our Royals bus trip again this year. All the people that went on our bus trip. We had a blast. Big thanks to John and Gerard's Grocery there in Osborne, Cunningham Telephone and Cable. Also, Bonert Welding and Jewel, Dairy Queen in Beloit, and Mankato Professional Pharmacy for being sign-up locations. We couldn't do it without them. And I already got messages from some of our folks that were on the bus, sending them to us via Facebook that they had a great time. Look forward to being with us next year. So we at least... The Royals didn't necessarily do everything right, but we as an entity must have done something right for people still to want to go back to watch the Royals despite blowing a 6-0 lead with six outs to go. I will say the Royals did a really nice job of helping us organize. I think the Royals marketing department has a really difficult job right now, and I wouldn't want to be in their shoes trying to sell season tickets and everything else. But those people work very hard to try to get you to go to games. And, I mean, at the game, there was nothing negative about the experience other than not holding on to a 6-0 lead. And if that's the worst thing that happens when you go to a sporting event, you know, and you're happy and you have a good time all the way up to that. And even if the Royals lost 12-0 yesterday, I don't think anybody was going to complain. We just had a great time, and Jason got some sun.
I did.
Jason's got a little bit of sun there.
I did everything right, but my knees were not covered up.
Oh, your knees got burned?
I got a little on the side of my face, which I always get that no matter what. But
I took the long sleeve thinking I need it, but no, sun was out all day. I was like, feels good.
I got a little warm at the end.
Yeah.
But I had a long sleeve shirt because I didn't want to get fried like that. Yeah. And then I once again do not win Father of the Year because I had sunscreen in a bag and I failed to put it on my son and we apparently forgot to bring a hat, or he did, whichever you want to blame. I don't matter who you want to blame, me, him, whatever. And he got a little bit sunburned. Mom noticed that as soon as we got home. Like, yeah, I'm not winning no Father of the Year award. By the way, he comes up to me and he says, because what do I do now when we're coming back from the trip? It's like, should I check on everybody again? I'm like, dude, you just did that a couple minutes ago. Just take a break. Sit down, relax. He goes, I'm bored. I said, you could just sit down, take a nap or something. He's like, I'm bored. Why didn't we bring any electronics? I was like, I didn't say you couldn't. You could have.
Yeah.
Well, but I didn't know I could bring them on the bus. I didn't tell you you couldn't, but I didn't know. Like, I had a few other things I had to load on the bus. I really wasn't worried about an iPod, okay? So it was kind of funny. But he made it through. I think it's good without the electronics because it makes him actually focus on what he was supposed to do. And I thought he did a pretty good job. So Dusty made it back without having a flat tire.
We'll say that.
Okay, something like that. You made it back safely.
I did
safely.
Have to put my donut on.
You did? Okay, yeah. Well, at least you made it back safely. That's
I did make it back safely.
That's the important
thing. Way later than I wanted to be, but...
Yeah, well, at least you made it back safely. That's the important thing. 10:47, our top, 54 degrees. That's been the ticket today. We'll try to realize that the Royals are not going to win the World Series this year, and we'll accept that fact. We just really, all we want is to see a 21-year-old play instead of a 33-year-old, although we're cool with watching both of them play at the same time, but please be consistent in what you're doing with your organization, and right now the Royals are all over the place.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.